Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Creative Control is a panel discussion about the Canadian hip-hop landscape. Brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, CFRU 93.3 FM, and Granddad's Donuts, and was recorded before a live audience at the Megafono Conference and Festival in Ottawa, Ontario, on Thursday, February 7th, 2019.
Hi, everyone. How you doing? My name is Vish. I live in Guelph, Ontario. I'm a journalist and a podcast person. And I also manage CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. It's great to be back in Ottawa. And as John mentioned, we were here for a hip-hop panel. And I thought what we would do is we would get all of our panelists to, one at a time, introduce themselves, maybe cite the city they're from, their affiliation, if they want to cite such a thing. And maybe as a little introduction, Aaron and I have done this before on a hip-hop panel. I thought it might be interesting to hear from each of you about the first memory you have of what got you into hip-hop culture. The first song, the first artist, whatever sparked joy, as we like to say now, I guess, about hip-hop culture. So just dig into your memory banks, think about it. You guys look quizzical, thinking about this, pondering this. So maybe, Aaron, do you mind starting, because we've done this before, and introduce yourself, and we'll be off.
All right, I'm Aaron. I'm the hip-hop editor for Exclaim magazine, and I've kind of been working in this industry for the past 10 years, more or less. Recently worked on a documentary called Hip Hop Evolution, which is on Netflix. I feel like my answer is going to change from the last time we did this.
Just like hip-hop, right? I would think, right?
But yeah. I almost feel like one of my first memories, because I was a little young and I didn't pay attention to everything, it would have been Left Eye Lopez on TLC's Waterfalls.
Oh.
Which is probably one of my earliest memories of actually loving rap.
What was it about that verse that got to you? Because, I mean, the rest of the song wasn't going that direction, right?
You know what? I tried to remember it as a kid. I tried to remember all the lyrics and do it myself, and then I couldn't. And that's really what it was. It was like the speed, the depth, the like everything about how that verse was delivered was essentially what drew me to understanding the technicalities behind rap as well.
It's a fascinating thing about a song like that one, because I would think the singing would be equally as impressive.
It was.
Like, I don't know how they sing like that, because the singing's so out of this world. But it's true, whenever a rap section happened in one of those songs, that's what grabbed my ear too.
Right.
Whereas I would try to do the same thing. I would try to rap. I would never try to sing.
No, right?
Because I'm like, I can't sing, but I talk fast. I talk a lot.
Right.
Maybe I can get into that. That's fascinating. That's fascinating to me. All right. Thank you very much, Aaron. How about a cheer for Aaron? I know it's early in the morning, but. All right. We move down the couch.
So I go by City Fidelia. I'm from Ottawa. I moved to Toronto about 4 or 5 years ago. In terms of my memories, the first time I fell in love with hip hop, I would say, when I was young in my neighborhood in Ottawa, we used to like break dance and do like b-boy battles, freestyle battles, and like around that time, 106 at Park was popular too. So they used to have like their Freestyle Fridays. So like, I guess that's how I really fell in love with hip hop. Just kind of, I guess, like imitate a lot of things I would see on TV and then just like find my own way to put my words together and, you know, like put a song together and whatnot. So, yeah, that was it for me.
Was there a specific artist that grabbed your attention? I'm just curious.
I would say the first song I had on repeat was probably the song Money, Power, Respect by The Lox. And I love DMX part. Like his aggression, like at the end of the song, always caught me. And I remember I used to perform at it was like Carabana, but in Ottawa, like a long time ago. And when it used to be on not Rideau, but one of these streets downtown. And I remember I went to my dad. I'm like, "Can I have my bars ready?" And I spit like the DMX. He's like, "Nah, you're not doing that." But yeah.
Did he not want you to do it for the content or because you were copying someone else's?
Oh, the content. Like in that verse, like DMX is like swearing, like he's going in.
He's cursing.
But yeah, for me, I didn't know what those, like I knew what it meant, but I didn't think it was as bad as like it is, you know. So yeah.
So how old were you at this time?
I think I was around 7, 8, yeah, around that time, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, my son is 7 and he just obsessively memorizes raps. Yeah. And I just think it's fascinating because your brain at that age is very like open and you absorb things and like it's my, people are like, "What? How does he know all the words to those songs?"
It's so true because I have a hard time memorizing lyrics now. Like unless it's like my own or my friends that I hear all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I have a hard time memorizing lyrics now.
So did that verse inform any of your early writing? Like, do you have a sense?
Oh, yeah. Like, for some reason, I don't know if I was, like, angry as a young kid, but, like, everything was, like, you know, like, what was popular then? Like, guns, drug dealing,
right,
raps. Yeah. But, like, as I found myself, I started, like, just writing about my life, you know.
Have you ever seen DMX play live?
No, but I watch his shows on the internet, though.
He's on tour. He's coming on tour, but he can't come to Canada. But he is playing Detroit.
Oh, that's DMX next door?
Trip to Detroit to go see DMX.
Have you ever seen DMX?
No.
I saw him on the Hard Knock Life tour, and he proselytized most of the time. He just talked about religion. So he did his rap. He rapped, but he also just speech. Like he just preached. It was interesting.
Yeah, his prayers are powerful.
Yeah.
I remember in high school, I made my school actually play his prayer like in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, right. I was a DMX fan as a kid.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you, Luigi. How about a hand for Luigi, everyone?
Hello, everybody. My name is Jonathan Shamar. I work in management. I manage a very popular artist named Knight Lavelle, as well as an artist in America called Joey Fats. My first recollection of me even being around hip hop was, you know, like Vish said, actually, like the age of 8, 9, 10, super impressionable, you know. My brother brought home like some CDs and I was going through his little CD box and I found a 50 Cent CD. So I plugged it in and, you know, I was just like, "Yo, this shit is so fire." You know what I'm saying? And I think that was the time when he was like working with The Game and then they dropped a song called Hit It or Love It. And to me, that song was like so empowering. I was like, wow, like I just kept rapping the lyrics to my mom and she was like, "Stop talking, stop cussing, like hit it." I'm like, "But it's just music. I didn't even mean it. I didn't mean to curse." And then, you know, I just really, really fell in love with like that part of hip hop and that kind of culture. But like I didn't really knew I loved it at the time.
Yeah.
I was just kind of consuming like what I got. And as I grew older, you know, in high school, I started like discovering HMV. So I would literally just go to like that store after school and like just like get like whatever's at the front of the store and just cop new CDs if I could afford it, you know.
Right,
you know,
right.
Little ones who, you know. but yeah, just like, you know, really got in and really listened to a lot of hip hop. And then, you know, I gradually just discovered like, you know, The Game and these underground guys and just kept going from there, man. I just got inspired from that.
I want to just home in on what you were saying about how even, I know you were only 8 or 9, so it might be foggy for you, but you mentioned feeling empowered. And a lot of what one of the reasons I gravitated towards hip hop is because I also found it empowering. Mm-hmm. I found the outspokenness and the fearlessness of it empowering. Like it actually, I feel like it shaped me on some level as a young person. Do you have a sense of why that aspect of it spoke to you?
To be fair, like I just like felt like the music and being an artist, they like seemed like they were free. They can do whatever they wanted to do. Like there was no real barriers.
But in that particular form or genre, did that seem more free and empowering than others?
To be fair, like I never listened to anything else other than like maybe soca. Like my mom, right. I'm from the Caribbean, so like, you know, soca music and like reggae and hip hop. Like since there was a lot of cursing in hip hop, I never had a chance to like really dive into it because obviously being a child, my mom's like, hell no, you know.
That's true. I never really think about the cursing aspect of hip hop as being this. I guess it's true. It's rebellious. I mean, it's obviously rebellious, right?
Of course, yeah.
If you hear the same song on the radio, the fact that it's being censored on one hand, it's corny. On another, it's like cool. Like they're just saying whatever they want. They don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
And that part's cool. But I guess that also, when you're young, you're like, oh my god, they're cursing. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
100%. And as well, I think, you know, like at the time, like I was looking at the Game and 50 Cent, they were showing a lot of togetherness, you know, while they were teaming up and like doing these crazy collaborations. And I was like, wow, like, you know, it's not so much about like, you know, doing your own thing and just like separate yourself from everybody else. It's just about they were making it seem like we're a family and like we came together and, you know, make records. But I guess now they're not so much, you know, family or friends anymore. But back in those days.
The familial thing seems to be a bit fraught. Like it seems to. Beefs happen, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. Did that appeal to you, the combative nature of hip-hop? Like,
I mean, like...
It's competitive.
Yeah.
We think of it as one of the more competitive musical forms, but that's the other side of the danger, right? There's, like, a bit of animosity. There's some... Unfortunately, there's violence, even.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't really on the internet like that, so I wasn't able to, like, dive into, like, what was really happening. I just got the music, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't see all of the real, like, the press and, like... The real, like, you know, internet stuff. So I wasn't really like changed. My mind was always just about, okay, fire music, next, what's fire?
Yeah.
Kept moving on. So I wasn't really biased based on like press articles and whatnot and what they were doing in their own lives. Right.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. How about a hand for Jonathan as well? Thank you, Jonathan. It's nice to meet all of you. Just to open the floor, we're going to focus on hip hop in Ottawa. In this panel, and I'm excited to do that because, to be honest, like there are things about it that I don't know, and I imagine there's other people like me here, maybe. So I'm eager to learn, but I just want to open the floor here to follow up on what we were just talking about because I thought it was interesting that all of you talked about rapping and verses. Very few of you, I don't think anyone talked about music and production, and that's a huge part of hip hop too. And let's go with who wants to start this. I wonder, like, does anyone want to talk about when the music actually impacted you and how the music impacted you, like the production? Because that's a totally, I think, still on some level an unheralded aspect of hip hop music. Everyone focuses on the rap.
Yeah, you can go for it.
I would say for me, when I really got to the production aspect, it was when I worked on my first mixtape because I was. Working hand in hand with a producer, and what we were doing were like digging into, like, you know, crates and finding different records, different samples, and like pretty much putting the beats together. So from there, that's when I really got into like Jay Dilla, and I'm a huge fan of Kanye West, even though the world might hate him. That's still my guy.
Isn't it hard? Isn't it difficult to remember when this shit wasn't going on? And I was doing the dishes the other day, and because I have two kids, I put on the uncensored version of Watch the Throne. Or rather, the censored version, sorry. No, I actually go hardcore with my kids. I just like the super uncensored version of Watch the Throne that you can only find on the, you know, whatever. Anyway, yeah, no, so I put it on, and I was just like, wow. Like, I felt a little dirty listening.
Yeah.
That was this week. I was just like, Kanye. But, man... What a genius he used to be.
No, for sure. For me, I would say like where I grew up, I would say is like if I look back and I think back to like the things that people used to do in my neighborhood. Like, a lot of people make mistakes. So I'm used to watching people make mistakes constantly, and I'm the kind of guy that, like, I'm all about your intentions. So sometimes you have good intentions, but to the public, like, it doesn't come off as good intentions. So I'm the kind of guy that I take my time. I really read through, like, what the person is trying to say or whatnot.
You're talking about Kanye as a figure right now, not as a producer, right?
Yeah, as a figure.
Yeah.
So
okay, sorry.
So that's why even with his music, it doesn't stop me from, like, liking what he does, because at the end of the day, it did make me a good person. Like,
yeah.
Listening to his beats and listening to his lyrics made me feel, like, accepted, because I felt like I was the guy in the neighborhood that was like, okay, like, while you guys want to do your thing, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to look fresh.
Yeah.
I'm going to dress different from you guys.
Yeah.
So I never forget that, you know?
Yeah. Aaron, I guess my question was a little vague, but do you have any thoughts on music production in hip hop and the significance of that and how it impacted you, like just hearing beats?
Yeah. So my parents are South African. So we grew up on a lot of South African jazz and a lot of, like, a house every now and then and some other genres. So, you know, I don't think I was always a lyrics first type of person. And that's probably why I gravitated towards, you know, people like Tupac. But then, you know, I heard Tribe and all the jazz samples from there. And I think that's when I started to recognize that, you know, this is completely different than what I've heard before already. And that's when I kind of started gravitating towards samples more than just, like, actual bass lines.
Right.
But I mean, now today, I totally love production more than I do lyrics. I think that's just kind of the nature of a lot of the music today. It's, you know, you have amazing instrumentals and then the lyrics come after.
Hmm.
Yeah. Just a lot of what I've been listening to lately, at least.
Maybe because there's so much talking in the world. Everyone's talking all the time.
Yeah.
You just want music every once in a while.
I think I've also just hung out with too many producers at this point who have kind of skewed my perspective of how to look at a song.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Jonathan, do you want to speak to
this? Yeah, of course. To chime in on, like, you know, us not mentioning producers, I feel like artists are the face of the song, right? People overlook producers because, you know,
like the lead singer. Like, yes, the lead singers are often the focus of anything.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And it's like, that's not what you see first. It's like, as a consumer or like a 10-year-old, 12-year-old kid, you're getting the product, the final product. You're just listening to, 50 Cent or like Drake or whatnot. It's like, but like, I guess moving to times like these, it's like they're popularizing producers like Boy Wonder and like Pharrell. And, you know, these guys have their own brands, right? So you're able to, like, see, you know, who's behind the record. And people care more who's behind the record. Whereas before, I feel like as a young kid, you don't really care about, you know, who produced the song. If the song's fire in the radio, you're just going to sing the record.
I'm trying to think of who marked that sea change. Like, for me, in my head, it feels like it was Dr. Dre, probably. Like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is a Dre beat.
I think, like, he was one of the, you know, people that, like, you know, push that, like, okay, like, producers are people as well. Like, they're always overlooked.
Yeah.
And even on social media, they're always complaining about being overlooked. It's like, yo, I made this beat and, you know, no one knows I made this beat and this song is a hit, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just the climate of the industry. Like, people overlook people all the time. And like artists, there's 10 guys behind the artist that you don't even know, PR and the whole team. So,
yeah.
You know, producers are, you know, the creatives along with the engineers that get overlooked, and that's just how it's going to be until there are more producers that are, you know, pushing their own brands and, you know, just driving their own businesses outside of, like, the artists that they're working with, right?
Well, this might segue into our discussion about this particular city of Ottawa, because I feel like when a music genre starts to blossom, if you will, there are these behind-the-scenes figures that are helping that along. I guess let's start with, I thought it might be interesting to talk about Ottawa hip hop from the perspective of an outsider, like someone external to it, particularly we have such a knowledgeable journalist here. Actually, yeah, I'm going to follow that thread and see if we can start with that. Perceptions of Ottawa. Are you okay with this? I'm just curious about that. And then maybe we'll go to, and I guess you're in Toronto now, Luigi, but, and we'll get to why that's the case. That's probably a heated topic around here, maybe, I don't know. But Aaron, what because like I was saying earlier, I feel I've heard bits and pieces about Ottawa's hip hop scene over the last few years. I was at Megafauna last year, so I learned a fair amount about its history. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're based in Toronto. You're a hip hop journalist. You're ears to the ground. What's your perception of Ottawa currently as a hip hop mecca in this country, if it is one? And maybe can you also talk about how that perception has maybe evolved over the last few years?
So this is a tough one because I think all the artists from Ottawa that I've met in Toronto. Yeah. I met City in Toronto. You know what I mean? Like I'm not really sure who's really who's sticking around to kind of build the infrastructure in Ottawa right now, as opposed to just leaving and going to maybe Montreal or Toronto. So when I look at the scene, I'm like, okay, cool. There's great artists. Of course there's great artists, but what's going to happen to the actual city and what's going to happen to the community here, I'm not sure.
Okay. And I wonder also, like, because you're based in Toronto, and Toronto, as we all know, is the center of Canada's universe. Could that... I was being sarcastic. But it's true, unfortunately, on some level as well. Is that true of other cities for you? Like, are there other... Is Ottawa among a few other hotbeds that are emerging that you only really are exposed to when they show up in Toronto, when the artists show up in Toronto?
No, I feel like like Montreal kind of has their own distinct scene. Right. Vancouver is starting to bubble. You know, Halifax has their own thing going on. I think it's just maybe the proximity towards Toronto that doesn't really make sense because Montreal's just as close. But
this isn't a Leafs Senators rivalry thing by some measure.
Hockey,
you don't
so
watch
I'm
hockey,
really
okay?
Go all the way over.
I mean,
not my thing.
I just Ottawa is not as close to Toronto as we think on some level. So I wonder. Yeah, it's. I feel like this has been what you're saying about the hip hop community and scene in Ottawa, and how it's regarded, could be true of the indie rock scene in Ottawa too that I'm familiar with, and the rock scene. Like Ottawa is always, I don't know why, not treated with as much respect by, let's say, Toronto as a whole, by the industry as a whole, and I've never really understood that.
But I mean, Toronto took decades to finally get that respect as well. So it's
That's true.
You know, so like we struggled with this weird self-hatred thing for so many years. And we used to leave and go to other cities as well. So I'm not sure if maybe that's just the thing that's happening here, or really it just comes down to the infrastructure, the venues, how things operate, which is still a struggle in the city, like in Toronto.
Yeah. Okay, City, why don't you take this from here? You left here, as I mentioned, potentially the source of some frustration for some here. Why did you feel the need to leave Ottawa for Toronto?
First off, like the reason I started music was to find like an outlet to take care of my, you know, take care of my family or whatnot. It wasn't too much of like accolades and all that. So in the city, I did all the opening acts. I did the biggest festivals, Blues Fest. I did all that and I just sat down. I was like, what else, you know, like what's going to get me to that next level? So then one day I literally just woke up. I'm like, I'm moving to Toronto. And I got like a condo downtown. I didn't even know how I was going to pay the next month's rent. But I'm like, I'm doing it. And I had a futon on my floor. It was like, it's one of those things where from the outside, like my life looked great. But once you go into my house, there was like literally nothing in there. But then the difference, I would say, between Ottawa and Toronto is not really a thing when it comes to artists. It's more of like, for example, you have like Aaron there that writes for Exclaim. In Ottawa, it's like it's building, but we don't really have something like that right now. We have something called Shifters Magazine that's like, they're growing right now. They're really becoming, they're making the way to becoming like a real credible source when it comes to presenting new music and putting other artists on from like Ottawa.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, like Aaron was saying earlier, is we don't really have an infrastructure. The people that have influence in the city don't really like hip hop like that. They're more top 40. And I think what's going to change is the moment where they realize that like hip hop is the number one genre. Like all these kids are listening to hip hop. People that are roughly, you know, even 35 and up are listening to hip hop. I think that's when the city's gonna grow. And another thing is a lot of artists that feel, or people in Ottawa want to be an artist, and we need more people that are passionate about other things as well when it comes to hip hop. So like writing, being an engineer, being a producer. Because like when people ask me like, oh, like, do you know any engineers in the city? I'm like, well, there's like three that can help you compete with what's happening out there. So yeah, I don't know. That's so, my take on it.
I mean, it sounds like you moved to Toronto for exposure. Like you had no, you got a condo, and then right away you're hustling for what exactly? What's
yeah,
your it was, next move. You bought a futon. We all know that. After you buy the futon in Toronto, what are you doing to make a name for yourself?
So what I did is I started throwing parties. So I would like rent
in
out
the
like
sparse
a venue.
Condo.
No, well, actually, yeah, there was actually some crazy some parties APs in my condos. Yeah, after parties. But I would, get a venue, and then I would, like, hit up some friends that I knew. I'm like, give me the hottest DJ in the city. Like, I'm going to book them. I don't care how much money they cost. Like, I want to book them. And then that's how I met, like DJ Bambi and Crosby and those people. And then my, like, roommate, he was, like, a really outgoing guy, so like he would go out and bring the after party to my house like all the time. So I met people like that too, and then just going to panels, you know. So that's where I met her a lot. Everywhere I seen that she would like talk, I would show up, she would see my face a lot, and then it gets to the point where people, you know, start like connecting with you, and if the music is good, then you know they'll look out for what you do, you know.
You have mentioned media a couple of times now.
Yeah.
The importance of Ottawa, you said, has one local publication. It sounds like you were following Erin around, frankly.
pretty much.
You know, she works for Exclaim. I work for Exclaim too. Leave me alone. It's fascinating to me that was so important to you. I think, as Erin and I can attest, like it feels very fraught to be in the media landscape right now. And a lot of artists are able to do the work that we would normally be able to help them do on their own, on some level, a little bit. I'm not trying to shortchange what we do. But that's fascinating to me that you really, that's almost old school. Like, I need to get media exposure.
Yeah, and I think during those times, like, blogs were still, like, super important.
Right, okay, right.
So
influence.
Yeah.
The influence of that.
But it's funny because before I moved to Toronto, I had an interview on Noisy. And in that article, I said I wouldn't move from Ottawa. I was like, yeah, people leave. I'm not leaving. I switched up. It's all good. At least I admit to it.
So what exactly has shifted for you in terms of success? I mean, to follow up on what you were saying, we've gone from the sparse condo with the futon and then the parties. You're following Erin around. You're getting some media attention. Did it pay off? Do you feel
like
it paid
off? Yeah,
it
did pay off. Like, yeah. It pretty much, like, changed my life. Like, the first, you know, like, year, it was rough, obviously, trying to get to know who's what. But then when I dropped my first, like, project in Toronto, my first single hit like I think it's like 4.6 million streams,
right,
independently. And from there, I kind of like a lot of people that I used to reach out to saw me grow, you know. And even if, let's say, they weren't able to provide their services at the time, at least they were like, okay, this guy is like serious. Like he never disrespected me. He found his way to get here. And it's like, because at the end of the day, it has to work for both people. That's business. So.
Do you have any sense of why mm-hmm. younger you, more naive you, might have said, I'm never leaving Ottawa? Is that a regionalism? Like, I mean, people have this inherent regionalism within them, right? A pride for their hometown. I assume that's what it was. But then reality kind of...
Yeah, I think, reality hit. And I'm still on the same mission. Like, my mission from the beginning, too, was always to, like, help Ottawa become, like, have a bigger platform. But it's just, at the time, I thought, like, I'd be able to be a savior by being in the city. But that wasn't the reality of it, you know? Okay. with the situation.
I appreciate that, Sue. Jonathan, do you want to talk a little bit about Ottawa's infrastructure or lack thereof and the fact that people like City have fled?
Don't worry, bro. Don't worry, man.
I'm obviously only kidding. But
No, of course, of course. I think it's probably common for people to think that they need to leave to succeed in a major city because the infrastructure is not there. You know,
you're here still, by the way, right?
I'm not from here. I'm from Toronto, but I come here all the time, so I can say I'm kind of from here.
Okay,
right?
I see.
So I come here enough to like kind of know what's going on, and my artist is from here. My whole team is from Ottawa, so
I see. Okay,
I always hear what's going on and about. You know, we've had problems with venues and the capacities being like weird sizes, and you know, not being able to support new acts, right? Like you know, he was saying, there's not enough of other people that don't rap and don't sing. You know, there's not enough managers, not enough engineers to facilitate, to create artists to really blow up, because artists can't do it all, right? They need someone to help them out. So, I mean, some artists can produce and engineer and do their whole stuff themselves, but it comes down to team. It comes down to people to, you know, come around and collaborate to create that stuff, you know? So I think, you know, so Toronto just got, you know, its name back, like from, you know, like you said, years and years of trying to get it back, and us being the soft side of the border. Oh yeah, just the you know guys up there. You know, now we have, you know, a few major acts, and we're now competing, and you know, people are seeing us for, you know, who we are. And if Vancouver, I think, is now bubbling, Ottawa is, you know, should be, you know, either equal or somewhat behind, because Vancouver has all of that money, all of that sauce, and they should be moving forward faster than, you know, where they're at right now.
So when you talk about these infrastructure issues, I'm trying to figure out who you're speaking to. Every time we've talked about that, and Aaron, we just talked about this last year, I think it was, there's a sense that something needs to be done on an infrastructure level, that people need to, there need to be more people like you're discussing, like there need to be more engineers, there need to be more of this. But then I also am like, well, who is the onus on to sustain that infrastructure? How is that infrastructure going to be sustained? Is it the city you're talking about? We're talking about Ottawa. We're talking about Toronto and the difference between them. But I guess I wonder about solutions to this problem from all of your perspectives. Like, what actually needs to be done? Who needs to do it? How is this done? Because this venue situation you're all talking about is a national problem. We are living in Toronto, or I don't live in Toronto, I live in Guelph, but in Guelph and Toronto, I mean, in all the cities across Canada that I can think of, venues are being shut down, real estate is at a premium, so everything's being turned into a hair salon or a brew pub or a condo or whatever. And music is really devalued, live music, live culture. So I think that these are city issues, but at the same time, I don't know that the city is hearing this. And I guess my question is, when you all are speaking of these issues, are you trying to speak to the city? Are you trying to speak to the public to be more supportive and outgoing, to demonstrate that these are viable things? Who are you speaking to? What needs to be done? I know this is a huge question. I don't expect any of us to resolve it, but I'm just curious what your thought process is here when we talk about this.
It's a great question. You're right. Venues all around Canada are behind, and things are falling apart in a sense. And music, live shows are kind of dying, especially. But I mean, it's not so much towards just the public. It's towards just like the public, the government. It's just the overall structure and the government and everything else. It's not just one person. I mean, you can't really change things overnight. Like, it took 10 years for Toronto to even come back and even have a spark. I mean, there's no fix-it solution right now, but, I mean, there's definitely things that, you know, we can push for to help it, you know, change over time.
Yeah.
And, like I said, it's not going to be overnight. It'll take a long time to get back, but, you know, that's what I think.
Aaron, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, so with Toronto, I think there's probably 150 odd venues throughout the whole city or some shit like that. And about 8 can play rap. About 8.
Yeah, that's true.
So I've actually spoken to the city directly, it's like city researchers, and they're asking me, what's the issue with venues? What's the issue? You know, why is it so difficult for rap artists or for black artists, really, to actually access these venues? And it comes down to, you know, this underlying racist policy that comes into venue ownership. And that's something that no city can change because it's private ownership of these venues. And that's the end answer, is like, we can't do anything. So then we have to shift our minds to, how do we do DIY spaces? How do we create a space, take it over, get all the necessary, you know, permits, whether it's noise, whether it's alcohol, whatever. How do we do that legally so that's not shut down? Because again, if we're talking about rap, we're talking primarily about people of color and, you know, in large spaces, and that's automatically a police red flag. So how do we do these DIY spaces? And I think that's where, when we talk about infrastructure, that's where our mind needs to go at this point, is how to build that and how to do it on our own. But yeah, with regards to it changing, I mean, if I'm being told that I need to get an artist's criminal background check to book them at a venue, that's not going to change anytime soon. That's a federal, that's a provincial government thing. That's, you know, hands off from the city. There's a lot of things you just have to kind of build yourself around. There's so many obstacles, we just need to jump over them.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I mean, you are highlighting racism, which is a huge issue in this culture, and that is seemingly insurmountable. I mean, I don't know. That's a whole other thing. Yeah. It's a huge part of this thing. If people want to speak to that as well, I'm happy to hear about it. But thank you for your thoughts on that. City, do you want to speak to anything that we've been discussing?
Yeah, going back to what he was saying about the venues, yeah, he's right. You're either in the city, you're either playing in front of, like, let's say 300 to 400 people, or you have to do a stadium. There's no, like, in between, you know what I'm saying? And
what do you mean, though, in terms of?
Like, in terms of size of the venue,
oh,
like
you
the
just
capacity.
Mean in terms of what the venue, so you're either, right, I see. It's either small or giant.
Yeah,
right.
Giants.
There's
no mid-size places here, really.
In Ottawa, like, this is a city with money and you know, all these buildings. How is that possible? Like, that's just baffling to me.
No clue. I have no answer.
It's expensive, man. Like, these places aren't cheap. You know, it doesn't allow for people that are new to come in and afford $10,000, you know, spaces to play an indie show and support themselves.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they
yeah.
end up losing money, you know.
So
and
that is on the city on some level, like to
yeah,
not subsidize.
Course. Yeah, but then it comes back to private ownership, you know, like people own venues and they can say, you know, screw you. We had trouble booking our first show in Ottawa and we had to pay extra $2,000 out of our pocket to just have this guy allow all ages, you know, because, yeah. Oh, it's rap. These kids are crazy. Like, yeah. They're going to fuck up my shit and they're going to cause problems. It's like, bro, yo, you know, what else do you want? You have punk rock and indie rock guys here whipping their heads around doing the same shit we're doing.
Yeah.
Like, and then honestly, like, it's just about, it's a money thing. And they got to, you know, make their bread and that's what they're going to do. They're going to keep pushing you out and people can't afford it. And if you can, you have to pay the premium.
City, we've talked about, we're alluding to, and Aaron dove into how racism has impacted hip-hop culture in this country, and in Toronto in particular, is the example that she gave. Did you experience racism in your attempts to try to create music in this city, to try to find to access these the spaces that Jonathan's just mentioning?
Yeah, like I think when it comes to like the city, like there's things like I feel like the Rogers Channel or like CTV to look at me and look at my music and be like, you don't deserve to be here. When it's like wherever I go in the world, I'm, you know, throwing the Ottawa flag around. You know, I'm representing the city well, and I think that's always been like a difficult thing for me in the city. And also, yeah, sometimes when I do shows too, like the sound guy would be like, oh yeah, he's just gonna rap, and like my sound would be so shitty. And it's like, well, I'm putting my 100% in my art. Like, this is your art. You should be putting your 100% there too, you know? And
that's a recurring problem everywhere, I find, in terms of sound with hip hop. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, I've often heard in my work, I've heard primarily from women about sound people and how disrespectful sound people are towards women and presume they don't know what they're doing. And over the years, I've heard more and more. I remember attending an album release for Shad at the Opera House, and it was the worst sounding thing I'd ever heard. It would seem like a revenge mix, and I didn't understand where this was coming from. This is like a headlining artist. Like, it was sold out, and it sounded horrible. And yeah, it's a recurring issue as well. And that's another, I mean, we're going in all sorts of directions here, but that's another old guard. The sound crew people can be bitter and embittered and have animosity towards the stars of the show. So I'm sorry you experienced that as well.
Yeah. And I would say, yeah, like our radio station, like Night Lavelle's our biggest artist right now, and he's not getting play on the radio. And that, for me, that doesn't make sense. Like if it was a radio station where you don't play no Drake or you don't play anything like that, I get it. But like, since you do play hip hop, why are you not playing the number one artist from your city?
Yeah.
So that's it's kind of like a spit in the face. Like, nah, we don't respect. You're local. We don't respect what you're doing. I don't know. So I think once those things start evolving, I think that's when everything's gonna start.
I think
evolving.
We're touching upon something that came up in the last time Aaron and I sat on a hip hop panel together. Someone brought up the fact that the gatekeepers need to change. Like, basically, you need to have younger people, more knowledgeable people in these positions of power for a real change to be had. Do you see that? Is that happening at all on some level? Like, is the Blues Fest hiring a programmer that knows this music better, or what's going on?
For what I know,
I just picked Blues Fest because it's one of the more famous festivals here, but I'm just curious.
For what I know, I've heard that the Blues Fest been like taking in like suggestions of like what's happening in the city.
Well, they'll take suggestions. I'm used to giving paid artistic programmers suggestions, right? So that they get their money, and I'm helping book a festival to make it cool or whatever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I know they'll take suggestions. What I'm saying is these
is free.
Chess pieces have to move. Like, people have to be placed into these positions, and their work needs to be honored, and they need to be compensated for it. So I guess I'm wondering if... And I know this is a lot of the reason why people do DIY festivals or DIY venues is because they're like, fuck it, I need to own this, and I'm going to make this happen, and hopefully it'll grow. So that's, I guess, you're a little removed. As we all know, you moved away. But at the same, if anyone can speak to whether they feel that change is being affected by those sorts of things, by hiring practices, please speak to it, because that's what it sounds like. We need someone in the city who knows this stuff. So that they can say, let's just do it. Let's just get this done.
I think you're right, 100%. Gatekeepers need to change. And that's in music in general. These people are safeguarding, you know, blocking people from success and essentially saying, like, you know, you can't be here because, you know, my, you know, values are different than yours, or I believe this should be here and this should be here. I think, you know, it comes down to, you know, more people and more young people coming out and saying and being executives and trying to push for that and leading and trying to take over, because without us trying to be in those power positions, we can't change anything, because they're going to continually push us away, right? And it's all about just having power. It's music, like, it's a dog-eat-dog industry, and you have to have leverage to make shit happen, you know? And if you don't have leverage, you get bodied, yeah. and you get pushed yeah. away from everything. So yeah. it's all about leverage, and I'm sure you guys know for yourselves that, it, you know, if you don't have leverage, no one cares. Nobody actually cares.
Yeah, yeah. Often in regional music scenes, certain sounds emerge because everyone's kind of hanging out, making this. Maybe that's, you say there's only three engineers or three producers who people can call upon. That actually can create a sound for a city if there's sort of this, you know, not a lot of diversity on some level. For anyone on the floor who's listened extensively to Ottawa hip hop or rap music, is it possible to characterize it? Is it possible to say it has a particular tone, lyrically, musically? Is there a sound to Ottawa hip-hop that distinguishes itself? I'm just curious.
I don't think so yet, personally. I think we don't... I don't think the confidence level is there yet. So a lot of the music I've heard is very much like...
Is it derivative or...?
It's just kind of like imitating what's popular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think in order to make it, you gotta just do you. Like, that's what's hip hop always been. It's like you're able to be yourself, and that's how you're gonna cut through the noise. It's not about out rapping or out singing. It's literally about being yourself and being able to convey your message. And yeah.
But are people, do people hear, in terms of rapping, in terms of emceeing, do people talk about local issues a lot? Like, are there recurring themes that people are, like the stuff we're talking about, does that come up in the music, or is that also, is it, I mean, again, I'm asking you to generalize about a whole
yeah.
group of people, but I'm just curious if people talk about local stuff here.
I haven't heard it
you
in the music.
Do you,
not in the
ever?
Music. Like, I've heard it in like conversation, but
yeah.
never in the music.
That's fascinating
yeah.
on some level, because I feel like we've talked about a few rappers we like, and often they're representing their, and again, it's like Brooklyn or something. It's like it feels like a glamorous place. Ottawa doesn't feel glamorous on some level, but it's true to you. So I'm just curious if that's ever come up. Jonathan, have you noticed that? Like, do people?
You know, I've definitely had a lot of artists. I've actually went to his studio before, and I sat there for a couple hours, and you know, a lot of artists came through, and they told me problems that they had and how they should face the problems. And I honestly didn't have an answer, you know, for what they wanted to know about, because I feel like Ottawa, it's a lot of barriers to have to jump over as a new artist, and it's tough. And like, there's no real blueprint, you know, to get out and to become a superstar. Like, I can tell you here and sit here 100 times and tell you, put the music here, do this and do that.
Yeah.
But will it work? Maybe, you know, but you know, I can only just, you know, tell them, you know, my own opinion, and they have to really put it into fruition and try to see if it'll help them and their career. And like you said before too, there's a lot of like, you know, copying or mimicking, you know, with the music. I think sticking to, you know, their own sound and to what they know and what they generally actually like, you know what I'm saying? Like their own whatever, just whatever you want to make, just make that,
yeah.
right? And don't think that there's, you know, a blueprint, because there is no blueprint.
Right.
You know, if there's a blueprint, someone's lying. There's no way. Like,
I mean, but it's true of younger artists often. When you're first starting out, you are kind of emulating someone.
100%.
Even if it's like everyone.
100%.
Even if it's everyone that you've processed sort of coming out of you.
Yeah.
It takes a while to find your own voice.
Yeah.
So that's not, I don't think that's probably an Ottawa
No,
phenomenon.
No, that's totally not. Yeah. Like Tory Lanez was, you know, they said he was Nicki Minaj, Lil Wayne, Drake, and Big Sean in one person.
Yeah, right.
Now he's Tory Lanez,
right.
not anybody else. But, you know, I feel like kids need to feel like, you know, there's no, just do what you want to do and create what you want to do, and there's the internet. The internet is the most powerful thing ever. You know, you have to sit down and think of like, where do I want to be as a musician in 5 years, you know? You can look at other artists that you look up to and like study their blueprint and study how they got to where they want to be at. And if that's the kind of artist you want to be like, you might want to study what they did to get to where they're
yeah.
at. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? So there's no right or wrong answer. It's just about really just trying to figure it out and, you know, having somebody help build with you, you know.
We've alluded to the fact that there's a handful of producers in this city. We talked about Knight Lavelle a little bit, city you're from here. Do we want to take a moment to highlight some key figures in Ottawa hip-hop, maybe ones to watch for people who... This is being recorded and live-streamed, so there's people listening or watching.
Is there a live stream?
Is
Damn,
it,
that's different. Is I didn't it also know being, that.
You have told us that beforehand.
Shit.
I dressed up. Are we live streaming? Is it true? Yes. Are we on the internet?
Wow. Shout out to whoever's watching this. I did not burn any bridges.
I like that an hour in, I mentioned that we're transmitting. And you're like, what? But we are, anyway, there are people beyond this room hearing this and potentially watching this. Do you want to shout out some Ottawa figures that are worth shouting out, either of you?
Homie, I know you got some sauce in there.
My little brother, and I'm not just plugging him in because my little brother. he's actually really talented.
I told you this is being live streamed. Now you're compromising yourself. Seems like a conflict of interest.
No, but he's actually like super talented, and I think one of the things that are hurting him is what we've been talking about. Like, he really wants to stay here and try to make it for him. I keep telling him, like, make the move. But he's really talented. This guy named June from here is really talented.
Sorry, what's your little brother's name?
Jeff Sannon.
Okay.
That's what he goes by. And then an artist named June is really great.
Okay.
That's all I can think of right now.
If you want to figure out who the hottest artists in the city are, you got to go to this guy's studio, and they all come through there anyways.
And who is this guy?
This guy right here is Tino Bambino, producer, engineer, superstar. He's humble.
He can rap.
This guy's one of the guys that he's mentioning that are, you know, engineering, producing for multiple people in the city. I really like one person in particular. Her name's Leah Cloud. She's super dope. She's fire, man. Like, she's been doing her thing and really just putting her head down, just making music. Which is what I, you know, think is the right way to do it. Just make music for yourself. And, you know, you know, end of the day, it comes down to algorithm, you know. And, like, sometimes you might get hot out of nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an upside and a downside to our metrics-based economy. Like you were saying, I had 4.6 million views, or streams, rather. And that's awesome. But I know that that's rare. And I think because we see all these numbers in front of us all the time as creators, it can be totally demoralizing, and it can make you want to give up. I don't remember growing up and seeing the song I put on the internet, like in real time, how it was doing. Yeah. And I feel like that can be great, but I think it can also be tough. I don't know why I went on that depressing segue tangent, but sorry about that. Aaron, I think we should start to wrap up. And I just thought I would ask you if, hearing what these guys have said and what we've been discussing, like, we're at the like advice portion of the panel. Do you have advice for emerging Ottawa artists as a hip hop journalist? Because I think this was helpful the last time we did this, because you sort of outlined ways to get exposure, maybe ways to things to consider when you're trying to make a name for yourself. Is there something you want to say? And at that point, we were in Toronto, where people had a lot more access. Here we are in Ottawa. Like, do you have advice for emerging hip-hop artists or promoters or whomever?
You still have the same access because you have the internet.
Amen. Amen.
We are on the internet right now.
Amen.
It's amazing.
Live-streamed, apparently.
Apparently.
My advice is to, A, travel. Like, you don't have to leave the city. You don't have to get an apartment another city, but you do have to travel. You do have to go to the States and kind of feel out the different festivals and, you know, network yourself to a certain point where you can just be an email away or a call away from a lot of like the bigger people that you need to know. And my other thing is that when it comes to media, there's only so many outlets right now that are really, how do I put this? There's so many people who want a premiere on a blog or a website, and so many outlets are trying to pivot away from that. So what I would suggest, as opposed to, you know, consistently just open cold calling people or emailing people, is to actually look on media outlets and look at who's writing these stories and start familiarizing yourself with the people who are writing the stories about artists who are like you. And that way you can follow them on social media. You can understand how they speak, how they, you know, maybe how they kind of operate and how they take pitches or how they take their submissions or what have you. And start building that relationship from there, because once you have a relationship with a person in the media, they can kind of help you. And again, they'll see your name, they'll recognize it, they'll have a communication with you already. And it can go from there. But those are probably the two biggest things, is to familiarize yourself with the people who you want writing about you and to travel to festivals. A3C in Atlanta is a really great one. I've done a few Canadian showcases there, and you know, those have been pretty well received. And I know Nova Scotia has a team that always goes down as well. So it's like, just grab a team from your city and go down. Make, like, just get an Airbnb, split it. Mm-hmm. You know, flights are, I mean, they're, if you book in advance, they're okay. But yeah, it's just take a chance on yourself and put respect on your music, for sure.
You've talked about, a few of you have talked about blogs, and so earlier you were, a couple of you were criticizing mainstream radio. What about the role of campus and community radio in hip hop? That to me has always seemed like very significant. And I don't know, does it? I know the way we process music is primarily on the internet, streaming. Does campus and community radio still matter for hip hop?
I don't have an answer for that.
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I don't think people in school listen to the school radio like that, like for music. Yeah. Let's be real. Like,
well, no, but I mean, campus and community radio isn't simply for students, right? It is meant to be. It traditionally has been a place where artists have broken, where artists who can't get access to the stuff we've been talking about, programmers and staff at those stations take more chances, mm-hmm. and will expose those artists by playing them. I mean, there are language issues in just the same as there are on mainstream radio, but traditionally, I'm a little taken aback that you're like, no, because for me, that's how I used to discover music before the internet, was like, oh, like some intrepid listener had a show and they wanted to show it off. They wanted to support the artist and show off their musical taste on some level, and that was great because you would hear things that you would never hear before. So I just
feel like the masses of consumers of music don't really listen to, like, you know, community radio, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, domestic radio stations. They listen to, like, the commercial ones, and, like, they go on the internet and discover new things, or they, you know, go on Twitter or Instagram and go all these platforms and get new, you know, new posts. Yeah. People digest music way differently than they did before. I think there's obviously going to be a fraction of people that listen to these stations and find an artist that they like, but it's more so, you know, the commercial stations that these people have the, you know, the rights to control, and you have to be somebody to get beyond it, you know? Mm. Right. So it's tough.
There's less, like, Stretch and Bobbito shows and less, like, Ron Nelson's of the world, and more, I mean, everybody's pivoting towards podcasts and playlists. So, I mean, that's how we're finding our music at this point. And if you're listening to a podcast, that's your equivalent of community radio and who you're going to discover and, you know, all that good stuff that probably you loved is now in podcast form.
Do you guys work for Doug Ford?
Hell no.
Hard for me to hear. I never thought of that. No. I work for a community, campus and community radio station, so I'm a little biased. And it is still... Oh, sorry, we have a question from the audience?
Well, I just want to add to that, but I'm actually going to throw someone else under the bus.
Yeah, please.
We have... I work at CHMO, this community station.
Yeah.
It's the University of Ottawa, and we have pretty solid hip-hop programming, and I think it's been really important for us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our show hosts is here... Justin, do you mind, like, honestly?
Chime in, man. I'm uneducated,
bro. I don't
know.
Can someone get Justin a mic? Do you mind handing him the mic just so we have this?
Can you talk about the impact? Because every week he's playing, and so are other shows on CHO, playing local, like local-made hip-hop, and interacting with our local hip-hop audience. So I think regionally, I think there's an impact, but...
And I just want to echo that's been my experience, having been in the music industry for a long time, that's where I would... It's just fascinating to hear younger people be like, no. That
For me, it was more of like, I don't get played on it enough to know how it translates into something else. You know,
right.
So that's why I didn't have an answer.
Well, it's just fascinating because I will let you speak in a moment. But there is actually, for most campus and community stations, a mandate to reflect their community. Mm-hmm. So you're more likely to hear local hip-hop, local rock, local music that isn't going to be played on the big radio station in your town. You're more likely to hear that on a campus and community station is all I'm saying. Mm. Sorry. Please.
Yeah. So I go by the name of Dynamic, a.k.a. your favorite light skin. I do a radio show called Bring Your A-Game. And we play only Canadian content on the show.
Right.
So the blog started 10 years ago. I'm originally from Ottawa. I moved to Toronto 10 years ago.
And, here we go.
For music, just like City Fidelia did.
Right.
And for me, it was one of those things where the infrastructure wasn't here, so going to Toronto made sense. I did that and started the blog, Bring Your A-Game, to support Canadian music and kind of have... There was Hip Hop Canada, which you know is doing such a great job to this day, but
The website, yeah.
So I started bringyouragame.com, which is still going on. All Canadian content on there. And from there, it went to the radio stuff, so I was able to do like an online radio show with Hip Hop Canada for a bit, and then I went on to CIUT in Toronto. And I've been on there for the last couple of years. I just moved back to Ottawa in August for my daughter. And I started Bring Your A Game on CHUO now out here. So I've been doing the radio stuff and supporting Canadian content for the last 10 years. I'm an artist myself. And so I felt there was a need to do that. And I think community radio is definitely still important because there's artists out there that don't have, you know, any platform at all to get on, so we still need that.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, an artist like City Fidelia, he doesn't really necessarily need to tap into the community radio because he's doing so great he's doing.
Sure.
However, we still play his music. Like, we just played him last week on the show.
True.
You know what I mean?
I retweeted.
Yeah, you retweet, I know. And so, I mean, you know, community radio is really important. There was a show in Toronto called Project Bounce.
Yeah.
Which was huge for the culture of hip hop there. Here in Ottawa, we have one or two shows that are like that. There's the Peaceful Journey, and there's also the new BRL show, which I started 10 years ago, and before I moved to Toronto. Mm-hmm. That show's still happening. So that's one of the biggest, you know, shows for campus radio out here. And you know, the culture's here, man.
You know. I appreciate what you're saying. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Yeah. I do think we should wrap up. Oh, sorry, there's another question.
Another good comment. I think what would help elevate hip-hop in Ottawa or anything in Ottawa is if people from Ottawa were sitting on this panel. There's booking agents, there's, you know, producers in this room, there's radio people in this room. I just think it's unfortunate that no one was invited to be, or maybe they're invited to come.
Are you taking a shot at me right now? Because I got on a plane. I traveled for like 8 hours for an hour-long flight. I agree.
Yeah. Other
people
will see them as an authority, and that builds
it. 100%.
Yes. 100%. Absolutely.
I actually had that conversation with like Shifton Magazine like a couple of days ago, and that's why I told them, like, we need to empower people like you because, like, you're the one that's going to help, like, give us a voice. Like, I know Hot New Hip Hop, that's what they did with Tory Lanez back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, they had a big platform, and they would always put Tory Lanez on there. And it's just about, like, yeah, like someone outside of artists to build, like, compete with Ebro in the Morning, compete with Charlamagne, like that. When you get that platform, you put on whoever you guys want to put on, you know?
We have another question from the crowd there.
So I'm Nick Ozelson. I'm the executive director of the Ottawa Music Industry Coalition. We just had our first gathering of both the new and the old school hip-hop communities in Ottawa. 2 weeks ago, we're still working on notes, sorry. But after that meeting, both with us and the city, we're still trying to figure out how to, the city, not city.
It's a bit of a confusing name you have.
With us in the city, we're working on taking up with that suggestion of creating like an urban music association within the OMIC umbrella to help move forward the scene, because there's just so much popping here right now to be able to address all of the issues that these folks have been talking about and really make some massive headway in terms of raising the profile of the hip hop community and the R&B communities that are happening here. So that is coming down the pipeline.
we're just trying to work out the logistics of how that would work and how that could be funded and supported in a real tangible way, that we're not just making an announcement without there being some sort of concrete, you know, definitive, like, next step, this is how we're going to support you for that community so we can build that middle infrastructure, managers, engineers, producers, get them in touch with the artists and really build a community.
That's great to hear.
Beautiful.
Amazing. Thank you. Does anyone else have anything they want to say from their... Yes, Tina.
I think if we want to build Ottawa, Ottawa needs to show up. You know, like, there's a panel like this.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is gold. You know what I mean?
Yep.
People can learn and how to build themselves and others around them. But, like, how many free seats are there in here? You know what I mean? Like,
I'm trying not to highlight the fact that there are empty seats, because... But you're right.
Show up, you know yeah. what I mean? Whether yeah. it's yep. more promotion or whether it's just people showing up, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, it's a two-way street.
So sometimes that also comes down to access and how much, you know, the cost of attending something like this would be, or whether somebody can take their day off work. What I would suggest is, and I've done this back in Toronto, is to kind of work with the organization and maybe get community passes and start giving them out to people who should be here who cannot afford it. So last year I did some programming for a festival and they didn't pay me, mind you, and I brought some really great talents. They didn't pay me, but what I did do was get $10,000 worth of passes and handed them out throughout the city so that those younger kids could actually come. So that's probably one way to kind of combat that.
I like that a lot.
That's exactly what Omic did. We bought $3,000 worth of passes and we sold them for $20.
There you go. Perfect.
Amazing. Amen. Yes.
I mean, for what it's worth, I hope this live stream is being captured and retained on the internet. I know that this will be a podcast, if you'd like. Please circulate that. I didn't mean to plug myself there, but that would be a way that would be a way to spread the word. We have another question in the back.
Just a comment. I just wanted to say that this is probably the first diverse hip hop panel I've seen in Montreal or Ottawa.
Really?
Yeah. So props on that. Hey. In Montreal, I've seen like a not diverse panel talking about hip hop from Atlanta, talking about where like there's no like context. You know what I mean? And you were talking about booking agents and gatekeepers in hiring diverse programmers. That in Montreal is slowly depleting very quickly.
Yeah, no.
That percentage. I don't know if it's the same here as well, because of like buyouts of independent bookers and independent promoters.
Well, I appreciate the comment and the insight, and hopefully this was useful. It sounds, I'm gathering from the comments in the audience that people have things to say and have thought about things, so we appreciate that. Are there any other comments from the crowd at this point? Are we okay?
I just wanted to add, there's a lot of Shad lived here at one point. Socrates is originally from Ottawa. There's also this new artist, goes by the name of Dax. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah.
Got like a crazy following online. People like Michael Jackson, City Fidelia.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amazing talent here in the city that's gone out, but they come from here.
Nice. Good
of course,
hear.
Yeah. Belly's big.
Yeah, there should be. Somebody wants to start that list.
Yeah, facts.
Got a ticket in?
There you go, take
hit that it, retweet dude. Button, you know what I'm saying?
Do it.
Retweet button.
I want to go across the couch and give everyone here an opportunity to talk about upcoming projects. If you want to ask people to follow you the way City has followed Aaron. No, if you want to follow people on Twitter or Instagram or anything, like if you want to just plug yourself. I just want to give you guys all a shot to do that. So why don't we start at the end of the couch?
I think my socials, I guess, is Jonathan Shamar, Jonathon. It's very unique. Not
just
AM.
Like you.
and Shamar, well, yeah, it's right there. So there you go. Jonathan Shamar, everything across all platforms. Did you say share projects, you said?
Yeah, if you got upcoming stuff you want people to know about, like releases or anything.
Yes, Night Levaza album coming out.
Yeah.
February 22nd.
Hey.
Go stream that.
Can you send me that stream in advance?
Hi.
Please.
I would also like it. I would like
review it that way, and it would be blessed.
You know, I got a SoundCloud private link I could send you.
Perfect.
You know, I'll send you that little.
Sweet. Okay.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's it. Just the album coming out soon, and you know, Chadwa forever.
Nice. Thank you.
I'm City Fidelio across all the social platforms. I'm currently working on an album. He's the man behind it. He's going to be engineering, mixing all my stuff. And yeah, once it's out, I would love for all you guys to stream it. I'm aiming big for this one, so yeah.
Run it up. Please. Run it.
I got you.
Run it up, Dynamic.
I got
it
up. Radio. I got you.
That's what I like to hear. I'm going to play it on the radio.
Yes, I facts. Like that. That's what we want to hear. Where is, yeah, I'm playing it on the radio.
Exactly.
I'd like, if you'd like, why don't we do a podcast? Another one. Like, why don't you come? We could talk again. You don't want to talk to me again, do you?
I like talking.
I can tell.
I told myself that in 2019 I'm going to do more talking, so I'm going down.
Sweet. Awesome. Thank you, City.
I'm on all socials as ELLHAH, and that's Ella, if anybody says it out loud. Twitter wouldn't let me not have it without extra H's. And then if you have albums for artists or EPs or what have you, my email is on Exclaim's website, but it's literally just aaron@exclaim.ca. The sooner I can get advanced links of streams and what have you, the better chances you have of it being reviewed. You know, I've fallen into this world where I get album streams from labels the day after it releases, which is not helpful in any capacity. But yeah, just the quicker I can get something is great. And then also, I think a lot of people confuse the fact that I don't actually post like videos or singles on Exclaim. I just deal with projects and interviews. We have a news team, which is also on the site if you have anything to give them.
Sweet. Yeah. And again, I'm Vish. I'm at Vish Khanna on Twitter, at Vish Creative with a K. My show is called Creative Control. It's a podcast. You're on it right now. How about that? I think if all goes well, we're all on it right now. And I'm an assistant editor at Exclaim. And happy, and I'm Vish at exclaim.ca if you want to reach me. And that is our panel. I want to thank all of you for being here. Thanks to Megafono for having us and giving us this space. And I'd like to thank, I'll ask all of you to join me in thanking our panel. And I wish you all well. Have a good Megafono.
Beautiful.
Talk to you
thank
soon.
You.
Bye-bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.